someplace, but he's been pretty regular in showing up. Not punctual, but showing up. I want to take this opportunity right now to introduce the people who are here. To my right is Mr. Bernie Blasma, representative from South Anchorage, and myself, Terry Martin, chairman of the committee. And to my left is Mrs. Mary Isaac from Juneau, and she will be the administrative assistant during the regular session for the Health, Labor, and Commerce. And immediately to my front right is Mr. Ray Tyson, who is the administrative assistant for the interim. So we'll have a interface relationship there and changeover. Also, I want to introduce Mr. John Harlow, who's the representative for Representative Brian Rogers from Fairbanks, and keep him well informed of the committees. At the last minute, Brian couldn't come down on Monday morning, but at least would be informed. I think everyone received from us a letter, if not up here, kind of a little sheet of the general problems or the concepts that we'd like to talk about today. And basically, we feel that everything should be open so that, from my recollection, this would be the first time that we've had a committee to really look into the overall problems or the development of a statewide telecommunication system. And it seems like there's never been any really state policies written. And for those people in the administration that I did call, they felt that, you know, it would be most worthwhile for the committee to act as a nucleus to hear from the public as to what we should be doing or should not be doing. We have a number of bills in front of the committee, but those are not for specific consideration right now. I just want to bring it to your attention that there's at least four bills. All of them have to do with money, and they don't say much else. House Bill 517, you might later want to look into. It's a $31 million appropriation bill, and outside of that, from reading it, I can't gather much. House Bill 506 is a $40 million appropriation bill, and this is Representative Dick Randolph from Fairbanks.
Thanks. Sorry, Jerry.
Okay. House Bill 506, a $40 million appropriation bill, and it really doesn't tell us much more except to creating a telecommunication revolving loan fund. So later on when we get into session, we'll probably detail this or not even consider it, depends on what the testimony comes from this point here. House Bill 541, introduced by Representative Holbert, also is relating to powers and duties of the Telecommunication Division and providing for effective date. This does emphasize somewhat of private enterprise involvement with the statewide communication system. And so later on, if some people know about those and have already evaluated, fine, we'd like to have your input. We will have opportunities later, of course, to discuss them. The major thing that most people had concern about was the Executive Order Number 50, which is somewhat all-encompassing and certainly leads to many questions. But it seems to me to be the first step that anyone has taken to put a concept together. It's, of course, the executive order by the administration, the legislators last year, even though we had a couple meetings on it, did not pass it out, so automatically it comes into law. I don't think I have any other general information to give you right now, except to say that we'd like to have everybody possible sign up who's here at the hearings so that we can keep you informed, number one, of what transpires with the committees and the hearing. And also, if you want specific testimony from an individual, we can break it down and hopefully get that to you. The major vehicle will be to keep you informed in communication who's interested in the whole problem. Right now, as a matter of protocol more than anything else. I thought it might be worthwhile to have the new director of the television give us a overall view of how executive order is functioning, and more or less to educate us what weaknesses he finds, the strengths he finds in it, and any other thing he wants to talk about. So at this moment, I'd like to ask Mr. Alex Hill to please give his testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to lead off the proceedings here this morning. In my testimony, I'll try to talk a little bit about our new telecommunications organization and also to describe to you the project and the activities that we have underway right now that we've started in the first month or two of our new organization, and also to describe to you our concept of where we're headed and what we think our direction is as we see it. As you know, Executive Order 50 was effective July 1st of 81 with the beginning of the present fiscal year, and to briefly describe the organization that's implied by the executive order, there is created a new position for a deputy commissioner within the Department of Administration. Well, first I should say that all that I'll be talking about is housed within the Department of Administration, and that, of course, is a new element itself, which comes into being with the executive order. There's created a new deputy commissioner of administration, and that deputy commissioner is responsible for the telecommunications functions of the department. And that's the position that I was appointed to. The executive order was effective July 1st. My appointment was effective July 20th. So I've been on board now for about 2 months. Under the deputy commissioner are two telecommunications divisions. One is called the Division of Telecommunications Systems, and the other is called the Division of Telecommunications Services. Somewhat more descriptive names would probably be Operations and Planning. That is, the Division of Telecommunications Systems has an operations function, and the Division of Telecommunications Services has a function, has functions that include planning, assistance, and coordination. Planning to precede the budgeting process, assistance to state agencies and other organizations in the telecommunications area, and also coordination between state agencies in the telecommunications area. So we have our systems or operations division based here in Anchorage and our services division based here in Juneau. The systems or operations division is really just a new name for a division that existed before the executive order. That was the old Division of Communications, which was a part of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. It has about 55 people, most of whom are located here in Anchorage, but we have shops in Fairbanks, Juneau, and in some other locations around the state. Glen Ellen, Dillingham, and Soldotna are the ones that come to mind right now. The systems division is headed up by Mel Hoverston, who's sitting in the audience here in the second row. And Mel has headed that division for some time now. He came to us with the division from the Department of Transportation. Our new division the services or planning division is a new creation with the executive order. It formally became an entity July 1st when the executive order took effect. It's headed by Sue Plummer, who's sitting in the front row here to my left. And Sue came on board in late August, about a month after I took office. And she's been working since that time to essentially get organized, get some people on board, define positions, and start some of the projects that I'll describe to you to start them rolling. Sue's division has a total of 9 positions. That includes her own position and secretary's position, so it's really the director, her secretary, and then 7 planning or technical positions, professional positions within that division. So that's a much smaller division than our operations side. In addition to our 2 telecommunications divisions, we also now have the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission housed within the Department of Administration, and the APBC has the same sort of administrative tie to the department that it previously had to the Department of Education. The commission has been attached to our department now for administrative support in the same way that it was earlier attached to the Department of Education. The commission's executive director is Charlie Northrup, and Ms. Charlie is seated here in the second row behind Sue. I'd like to go on and describe the efforts that we have underway right now within our 2 divisions. Charlie will probably testify. I imagine he's planning to do that, and I think he'll probably speak for the commission himself. First of all, within our systems or operations division, we have a number of major engineering and construction projects that have previously been funded and are presently underway. The largest of those relates to satellite television and relates in particular to support for the Learn Alaska project, which is an instructional television project jointly undertaken by the University of Alaska and the Department of Education. They received a major appropriation for FY81, that is, in the legislative session prior to the one just ended. That FY81 appropriation, Senate Bill 165 was the bill number, included funding for about 115 sites around the state and for instructional television to be delivered to those sites. There's also an audio conferencing element of their program, which is presently operational. But our systems division is completing right now the arrangements that are necessary for the instructional television and its delivery to, as I said, about 115 sites scattered around the state. And the facilities in particular are mini TV transmitters and the satellite interconnect facilities that are required to support those locations. That was an FY81 appropriation. It's a large project, and it's a project that takes a long time to accomplish. The division has moved very, very quickly, I might say, in being able to, in being near completion at this time on those 115 sites. In addition to that, in the legislative session just ended, under House Bill 50, there was an FY82 appropriation to expand the Learn Alaska instructional television project in a major way, and also to expand the what has been called the television demonstration project, that is commercial or entertainment television delivery to the rural part of the state. And between the expansion of those two programs, the division is tasked with adding about 270 new mini transmitters to communities that are scattered around the state. So that, and that's a House Bill 50 appropriation for FY82. The division is has just been getting started in the past month or two on starting the wheels turning, planning, FCC licensing, and so on, that's required to support that, that very major project. As I said, about 270 new mini transmitters and the supporting satellite facilities were funded. In addition to those satellite television projects, the division is putting up a new microwave system for Kenai and Homer that will deliver four channels of television to those communities, and which will replace the translator system that they presently operate. It will provide a much higher quality television service to those communities. Some other projects underway within the division are a VHF communication system for the Hall Road, which will support highway maintenance and the troopers. New trooper communication center to be located here in Anchorage. That project is in the engineering stages right now. Communications for a new trooper emergency vehicle, which will essentially be a mobile communication center for youth and emergencies. That project is also in the engineering stages right now. A new microwave system to Girdwood, which will support four channels of television for that community. That project is also in engineering. A nav aid or navigational aid project to support aviation. Statewide, the division will be building 30 non-directional beacons, 53 remote weather sites, which will be remote weather reporting locations, which will supplement those that the Weather Bureau presently has, and 70 UNICOM facilities, which are VHF, air-to-ground communications facilities. And those projects are also in various stages. As I say, they will supplement facilities that are presently operated by the FAA and the Weather Bureau. So as you can see, the Systems Division is quite a diverse organization. They include engineers and technicians who design, install, and maintain quite a variety of telecommunications facilities scattered around the state. And I guess in many ways, to me, this division contains the unsung heroes of telecommunications, and you don't hear from them very much, but they're the ones that are out there doing the installation and maintaining all the many and wondrous facilities that we have scattered around the state. As I said, Mel Hoverson, the division director, is in the audience and will be present throughout the hearing, so that specific questions come up about any of these projects that I'm unable to answer, then we'll certainly get the answers for you, as it, whatever the questions might happen to be. Now I'd like to move on and talk a little bit about our new division, our services or planning division, which, as I said, is a very young organization and in the formative stages, but there are a number of projects which the division has already undertaken or is about to undertake, and some of those projects, all of those projects, I guess I should say, spring from either legislative intent or from missions assigned by the executive order. The first one I'll mention is a rural television study. The legislative intent for House Bill 50 ask the department to undertake a study of economic alternatives to full state support of rural television. The division is picking up on that intent and proceeding with an investigation of the economic alternatives to state funding. Of course, the state is involved in rural television, originally got involved because of some question about the economic viability of undertaking that kind of service for the private sector. But as we interpret what we're being asked to do, it is to go back and have another look at that and see if maybe there aren't some other ways to support that other than that. That's the way we read the legislative intent. So we're taking a total look at rural television within that division, and we intend in time for consideration in the next session to present to the administration and then subsequently to the legislature the range of options, whatever they might be, to economically support television in the rural areas. Another project, and it's a very major project, is development of a comprehensive plan for telecommunications uses by state government. As you know, the state operates and procures quite a variety of telecommunications services, and the intent of this particular effort is to inject a little planning into the process, a little forethought that will precede the funding and procurement of facilities. The comprehensive study or plan will include telephone, voice, and data facilities, and that project we do not expect to be complete because it is a very large one prior to the session, but we do hope to complete it in advance of the FY84 budgeting cycle, that is data communications facilities, if there's some restructuring or reorganization that's appropriate that comes out of this study, then we hope to include that in the FY84 budgeting cycle, which, as you know, begins for the administration, will begin for the administration in July of next year. A more limited scope project that goes along with that comprehensive plan is another one that springs from legislative intent, and it is a shorter term look at our telephone facilities, since there's some feeling that that's a more critical problem, and that plan will look at the telephone Centrex and tie line needs, what's presently in place and the state's needs. And that particular project we do expect to have, and we hope to have ready in time to present something in the next session. I might mention, in connection with that particular topic, that we see two major ways to think about that kind of a project. That is, from a pure cost-benefit standpoint, from the perspective of state government, what is the cheapest way to meet our needs? Can we save money on our telephone bill? I guess is an easy way to say that. There is also a side issue which relates to regulation and telecommunications policy, and that is, it's possible that since the state is a major telecommunications customer, that there can be some impact on rates charged to the public at large. There can be some impact springing from the state's procurement approach to this kind of facility. So what we intend to do is to make that a part of our effort and to give consideration to that kind of problem as part of our final recommendation on to the administration and subsequently to the legislature on that particular issue. Another project which the division hopes to start on soon, although it's not presently underway at this early stage of the game, is an instructional telecommunications plan. That is one thing that's mentioned in Executive Order 50, and we hope soon to start that in cooperation with the University of Alaska and the Department of Education, who are, of course, operating the Learn Alaska program right now. We don't feel comfortable with proceeding down that path all by ourselves. We think it's only reasonable that they be involved in it, so we're trying to make the arrangements that are necessary so that we can get started with that particular project. One of the very first things that the projects that the division started working on, in fact, the division started working on it even before Sue was on board, was an inventory of telecommunications facilities statewide. This is a requirement of the executive order, and that project is nearing completion right now. That's a computer-based inventory and information on both state government facilities and facilities available to the public at large will be available on the state's computer and will be accessible by our own people, and will also be trying to make it possible for other interested agencies to have access to the same information. Beyond studies, plans, and so on that we have in the works, and this is something where we have not taken any specific action, but something in which we have an interest, is demonstration projects. That is, demonstrations of technologies, perhaps brand new technologies that are available so that users, common carriers, industry, and so on have an opportunity to see something in action and pick up on it and use it to the extent that it may be viable, that it may be useful and economically viable. A couple of technologies that may be of interest as examples are, one is video text, which enables alphanumeric character information to be delivered over a standard television signal. It's kind of like captioning for the deaf, in that you don't see the information unless you have a special decoder. But if you do have a decoder, then you can get a full page of information on your TV screen, and with the decoder, you don't see the program that's being transmitted over that particular channel. There are really quite an array of applications for video text. They range from looking up airline schedules, to shop at home, to news of the day. And in a state where we have a statewide two channels of television now, it might make some sense for us to think about, at least think about, piggybacking something like this on, since we have the satellite internet, and there'd be no charge, at least there'd be no additional cost, at least for the transmission or internet portion of it. Another technology that we're interested in, and which may be a possibility for eventually moving rural TV to the private sector, to the extent that that's the desire of the policymakers, is direct broadcast satellite. That's a technology that the Comcast Corporation has announced and expects to make operational in the United States in 1985. So it's one that we are very interested in, at least in the rural TV context. And it's one that I mentioned not because we have anything specific in the works, but because it's an example of the kind of thing that could be demonstrated and then perhaps perhaps picked up on by the private sector or others. So I guess the way to summarize all this is that we see in implementing new technologies and new applications that come along, we see a multi-step process which begins perhaps with a demonstration project, although not necessarily. The demonstration project is just make information available to interested parties about what's possible and feasible. So whether or not a demonstration project has taken place, we see the planning process as being a very essential ingredient in the whole process, and that is in advance of funding appropriation, we feel that the new planning division is essential in taking the technological, economic, and organizational considerations into account in really taking a comprehensive look at what the telecommunications problems are, and then putting the options and the recommendations forward to the administration and the legislature, which can then take those into consideration in considering funding of new programs or modification of existing programs. Then after we get through the appropriations process and come time to implement and operate systems, then of course we're in Mel Hubbardson's systems division or operations division, and we go from there. So I suppose what I'm trying to say is that the thing that's really new about all this is the injection within the department, within the telecommunications organization, of this planning function. And that's the part that I think has my interest particularly at this point. I thought I'd close by just mentioning in general terms a couple of issues that we are interested in and which we think that you also might be interested in, telecommunications issues. And I just have two issues to mention which are rather broad in nature, but the first question, as I have written down in my notes here, is what must the state government do to facilitate development of telecommunication services by the private sector? And I guess the notion that's based on is, first of all, that in the United States, telecommunications is essentially a function of the private sector. That's the way that particular industry is structured in this nation. Other nations of the world do it other ways. In some places, it's solely a prerogative of government. But it is also true that the actions of government have impacts on the private sector and have impacts in particular on the services that become available to the public. So we're interested and concerned about the effects of those actions and what actions are appropriate in that context. In particular, one kind of action is procurement. That is the way that state government goes about procuring telecommunication services for its own use. And in fact, we are presently examining our procurement policies with this in mind. I mentioned earlier, in talking about telephone facilities, one of the ways in which the state's procurement can affect telephone rates that are charged to the public at large. A related issue is the following. What arrangements are necessary to assure that we will continue to develop our telephone network in the rural areas? And as I'm sure you know, unlike the rest of the United States, Alaska has not, in fact, achieved universal service in the telephone area. We still have areas which are not served, or at least do not have full telephone service. And that's a particularly difficult problem, particularly in this era of deregulation. The U.S. Congress is presently considering a bill called the Communications Rewrite. They've considered it for a few sessions running now and have not yet passed a law. But there is a essential ingredient of that Communications Rewrite, which is called the Universal Service Pool, and we in our organization are tracking that and providing input as necessary to see that in that legislation the proper arrangements are in place so that the telephone network in this state will be able to continue to develop so that we can move toward universal service. When you read the rewrite, you notice that, at least some versions of the rewrite, you notice an assumption that universal service exists. And that is, in fact, true in most parts of the United States, that universal service exists, and the problem is only one of maintaining that universal service. In Alaska and in also, in fact, in some isolated rural pockets of the United States, universal service is not a fact, and universal service pool is a mechanism for enabling both the maintenance of universal service where it does exist and also the development of universal service in those places, notably Alaska, where we've not yet reached it. So I just mentioned those as two of the issues that are of interest to our organization. They overlay against all the projects that I mentioned earlier and sort of cut through those projects. But they typify the kinds of really difficult economic problems that surround telecommunications. And that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. I'm sure you've developed in the minds of many people many questions. So we'll let the committee members first if you have any questions, Randy, I guess. Okay. I think what we'd like to do is mainly get maximum time to the people to give presentation, because I know all of us have a lot of questions. Some of the questions I have concerning Executive Order 50, I'll just give to you in one lump sum rather than bring it out there. But basically, one of the problems I still find, and your testimony didn't help solve this in my mind, is that have we set down a determination of what is the state policy? And page one of Executive Order 929 says a better public understanding of the state policy. And I really, as much stuff as I've tried to get through, can't find out what it really paper that said the state has a compelling interest here, or the state should do this, or our policy is to maximize private industry to reach the people, or in your testimony here, it seemed like you're going to try to maximize public money into reaching the people. And I think we have to come down with some determination as to where we're going to stop. Because it seems like that before we even determine that, the vision is going every which way to be everything to anybody, it seems like. And be the innovator rather than self, private industry.
Will I answer that now?
Go ahead.
Okay. I think we strongly agree with your feeling that there's an absence of telecommunications policies, and that we feel that that's one of the big things that we're pursuing in our various projects is to put forward a recommendation to the administration and then to the legislature on, in specific areas, what the state's policy should be. I think the word policy should probably be plural rather than singular, because there are quite a variety of issues. So we don't, as we start our new organization, we feel a void there, like you do, and we see that as a big part of our mission, to move toward the establishment and articulation of those policies, recognizing that we are not, within our organization, I'm only a deputy commissioner, I don't make state policy, but what we can do within our organization is we can analyze the problems and we can put forward our analysis and the recommendations so that the policymakers, namely the governor and the legislature, can move toward the determination of what those policies are.
Well, maybe today from testimony of other people we'll get an idea of what many others want, and hopefully this could be a nucleus for us to evaluate from everyone as to what the state role should be.
We'll be taking copious notes.
Good. Thank you. I'll just leave the many questions I have later for you, and then because I'm going to give priority to the many people here who want to get testimony. Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Thank you.
I'd like to encourage, I know some people came in once the meeting started. If you would sign the slips that we have over here, we'll try to keep you informed. But then also, if you want to give testimony, please make sure you contact Mrs. Isaac. And I'll go by what's on the list first. First gentleman, just here to observe, okay. Mr. Russ Meekins, Sr.
Chairman Martin and members of the committee, I'm Russ Meekins, Sr., and I'm here representing our old company, who is a telecommunications organization, which some of you are familiar with. In the past session of the legislature, a bill number 517 was introduced by Representative Freeman and 24 co-sponsors in the House. And you mentioned earlier that all it said in here was that there was money appropriated, $31 million to be appropriated for telecommunications, but didn't say much. But it does say in the bill that the distribution, reception, transmission, and facilities for satellite television capable of providing real-time multi-channel commercial television to service. And there was an error there in the bill. It had 150 communities, but it was supposed to be 200 communities in the state. And there are also a letter of intent put out by the Commerce Committee, which was delayed a little while and didn't go right with the bill, but I have copies here in case any of you don't have. The letter of intent kind of explains what this whole situation would be. However, in my testimony this morning, I'll kind of give you an idea of what it's supposed to do. 517 would provide real-time television. Well, real-time television means that if this, in the lower 48 states, if a person gets a certain program at 6 p.m. at night, you would get it here at 6 p.m. at night on any of the three major networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. And those three are the major networks. And the fourth channel concerned with this thing would be public television, which we are getting now through our ITV programs and through our local channel, like Channel 7 here in Anchorage and so forth. But this would give you full time. At the present time, you're only getting it partially every day, and partially live and partially not live. So the program is to expand our present television demonstration program, which has been a tremendous success. Legislature enacted that in 1976, and very popular and been a tremendous success. However, I'd like to point out that Alaska is currently first in revenue per capita in the 50 states. But Alaska is last in television reception of the 50 states. Alaska is the only state that does not have full-time, live, or real-time TV broadcast of the three major networks and the public broadcast system. The loss to the people of Alaska in education, health, information opportunities, reaction to current events, and entertainment is enormous and uncalculable. The loss to our rural citizens is even greater, as they do not, as a whole, have daily newspaper coverage. Currently, the major networks are going more and more for special events and special commentations by top reporters, rather than carry the story on the news. And many have noticed lately that there'd be something big happen in one of the major countries of the world, or some big special event, and the newspaper, the 6 o'clock news, which we get live, we'll only carry a little bit of it and say, tonight at 9 o'clock, we're going to have a special program for that, blah, blah, blah. Well, you never see that program because there is no time set up for, no money to broadcast that to our stations, and they just miss that. Well, what happens is that then 2 weeks later, when we get our normal broadcast from the stations, there's a gap there. And that gap is filled with some kind of an old repeat, maybe 2 or 3 years old, or 3 or 4 months old. During the last session, House Bill 517 was introduced by Freeman and the 24 sponsors. The Freeman bill would bring 4 channels of television to about 95% of the state's residents. It was designed to give Alaska citizens equal program with a major network to all the other people in the 49 states. Thousands of Alaska would be receiving 4 channels live on real-time television for the first time in the history of Alaska. This program can be installed with the various latest technical equipment at a cost of approximately $50 per person statewide, and the operational cost of approximately $1.25 per person per month. The total cost for the hardware was estimated at a one-time only $25.5 million. And the operational cost would be approximately $5 million. Now, in the bill, it calls for 6. However, that includes some of the transmission you're already paying for and on other appropriations, which is
real-time television is its educational informational value. It is without a doubt that TV is the greatest method to reach people for information available today. Yet thousands of Alaskans have no television or delayed programs, and our bush communities have no freedom of choice, receiving only 1 channel. In the major cities, we miss important news programs or vital events because the 2-week delay makes the event no longer news. In the proposed project, the private TV stations would indeed be benefited, as all programs would necessarily be channeled through the licensed network franchise, in other words, through their local station, and their individual advertising would be carried to even a larger area by satellite. This program of providing real-time coverage for major network TV will not interfere with cable or pay TV. Every city in the United States has live network TV today, and the cable business in those cities is flourishing. At this point, I may add that although I represent one telecommunication company, their only request is to have equal opportunity to bid on the various elements of the programs, telecommunication programs, and encourage free competition in the telecommunications in Alaska. The question on your letter of state versus private enterprise in the case of telecommunications, the answer is obvious. Even in the largest cities, which is Anchorage, the largest city of Alaska, it is not economically feasible for private business to pay transmission charges on a full-time basis. It is reasonable to assume that in the smaller cities and the rural areas, it will never be feasible. It is extremely beneficial to the state that the people be well informed. The costs are minimal when spread over the entire population. The earth stations should be owned by local private telephone companies where one exists, or by non-profit local co-ops where no telephone company exists. And the idea of that is you don't want one organization to own all these things and then be able to put the squeeze on prices and costs and everything else. We just don't want a monopoly situation to begin. We want to encourage private organizations and telephones to own these stations. Under this proposal, the state will not be involved in programming, which is another one of your questions you had in your letter, because as 4 channels will give each household individual freedom of choice to turn whatever station they so desire. And they wouldn't have to have someone taking votes on what program we want to give on one station benefit. right at the moment. And incidentally, our demonstration program does not cover anywhere near the 200 locations we have outlined in this proposal. It's my hope through this committee and that the state will provide this great service to all its people. Costs are small, and the important thing is that each and every citizen, rich or poor, can benefit equally from this state expenditure. Now, we often said, and I've heard in the last session and the previous session, many of you speaking about some kind of making it equal when you benefit money. Say, well, loan programs are great, but only people who buy a house benefit, or those that sell houses, or something else. And that's not an equal distribution of this state's revenues. Well, in this particular case, this would be one program which cannot be criticized in that respect, because each and every person who has a TV can equally benefit by that program. And I think just about everybody will have a TV once the program is instituted. And with that, I'll close and I'll answer any questions you might have.
But may we have copies of your testimony, especially that letter of intent? I didn't realize we had one.
Yeah, I'll give you all copies of that.
We'll make sure that's in the packet for everybody and for the public.
Does any member have a question?
Yeah, just one question, Mr. Meekins. I think I understood you correctly. You said to install this would cost about $50 a person,
right,
average, mm-hmm, and to operate it's $1.25 a person.
Per month.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Those are relatively modest costs.
Right.
I would agree. Then you also went on to say that this couldn't be done privately because it costs too much.
Right.
Is there something I'm misunderstanding?
Well, you see, when the state does it, they take in all the people, and that cost is divided among 400,000 residents of the state, or 308, I forget what the exact figure was in the last census. However, a private organization wouldn't be able to do that. They would only cover the major cities where the take would be better if you got $50 a person, so on and so forth. You bounce it over the whole state, that's something else. And when you got a satellite, your transmission costs are the same if it comes to one place or comes to the other. Now, if you reduce that cost, because it costs, say, like $70,000 to put a dish in a certain location, well, there's enough people to cover that in that particular idea. But if you blanket the deal, it's like an insurance policy, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. If you sell enough insurance policies, you can sure as hell reduce the cost overall, because the percentage of loss is divided amongst the whole people instead of just a few. It's the same way. That's why we have insurance. Originally, we started with Lloyd's of London, because the losses were spread over many people instead of one person.
One big difference with insurance companies and government is if you have a choice whether to buy the insurance policy or not.
No. Pardon?
So the big difference is that with insurance, you have the choice of whether or not to buy the insurance policy.
Mr. Randolph, I agree with you. However, I believe that the benefit, the unseen benefit to the state by having the people informed, even in rural communities, and even right here in Anchorage or in Fairbanks, informed of what's going on daily instead of a delay or a miss it completely or something else, is so much valuable to the state than any other program you have. It's almost as valuable as having the fresh air. And education is the second greatest necessity in the state of Alaska.
There's a lot of stuff on TV that you cannot equate with fresh air. But
I agree. But as the old story goes, if you want the donkey to behave, you first got to get his attention. You hit him with the 2x4, gets his attention. And the stuff they put in commercials, they need to get your attention. And then the stuff that comes up with for your information only and for other programs, so forth, and also the advertising, which you really don't particularly care to listen to, comes in there in between.
Back to just one more question on the equality bit. The village of 50 people, it costs $70,000 per addition to. The equality of the distribution of resources certainly is not there. It costs immensely more to put that service into those 70 people or whatever it is. It's a relatively small village than it does being at Anchorage. So you don't have an equitable distribution of the use of the money. It's going to cost $500 to take the service to some people, or maybe more, and it's going to cost less than $50 to others. So it's
well, if you gave
from that point of view, it's not an equitable distribution of the use of state resources.
Well, that's just a difference of philosophy. If you think that just because Anchorage is the biggest city in the world, they should get all the money, well, that's fine and dandy. But I think the people in the rural areas. I think the people in Anchorage benefit equally because they have the opportunity to turn it into. It's divided amongst the 400,000 people. And secondly, we benefit by those people out there knowing what's going on in the whole state, rather than sitting there and saying, we're not getting our share, we're not doing this, and having constant bickering. And this will also bring the people closer, knit together when they have this.
I'm not arguing all that at all. My only point is that it's not an equitable distribution of the money. It's going to cost hundreds of dollars to bring it to some people, and a few dollars to bring it to others. So it is costing.
Well, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
I'm not arguing that.
They equally benefit from the television, not on the money wise.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Meekin.
Okay.
Next gentleman, Mr. Gene Deck.
Chairman Martin and members, I am Gene Deck, Vice President of Robert Wolf Company of Alaska, and Associate Director. Due to other commitments Mr. Wolf was unable to make, and he asked me to pass on his apologies to you for his absence. I thank you for the opportunity to appear before this committee on such a vital and important issue as Alaska's future in telecommunications. Recently, we have seen Alaska's executive and legislative branches take a much needed step to increase the efficiency of telecommunications functions of state government. We are in agreement with this step and we laud you for it. We are encouraged by the intent in the executive order to develop in this new organization policies which will facilitate and develop basic and advanced telecommunications services and facilities, minimize the size and influence of state government by promoting private ownership and control of telecommunications facilities, and the intent to recognize the state's dependence upon innovative use of new telecommunications services and techniques. We believe these kinds of policies will permit growth of telecommunications services and facilities only if competitive forces are allowed to thrive in Alaska's marketplace. It is well known that Alaska's telecommunications atmosphere has been a monopoly since 1970 when private enterprise took over the Alaska communications system. Monopolies are well known for exclusive control of a commodity or service in given markets, which makes possible the fixing of prices and virtual elimination of free competition. Additionally, monopolies have no incentive or motivation to keep prices down or to introduce innovative services and new techniques. The other 49 states are presently benefiting from the government's well-established policies of promoting competition in terrestrial and satellite communications, while the established providers of these services in the other states understandably resisted such policies at the onset. There is almost unanimous agreement in the communications industry and in all other sectors that competition fosters efficient, economic, and well-directed communication services, and that it has not adversely affected any group or segment in the society. New technologies offered by new entrants in the telecommunications field are here. Alaska should take advantage of these technologies by making them available to its citizens. For instance, digital television transmission techniques, which permit a multiple number of TV signals to be transmitted in a single satellite transponder. Time division multiple access techniques, which permit a multiple number of users to access the same facility for message, telephone, data services, video. These are only two of which many are available. Open market competitive policies can make these technologies available to Alaska's citizens. In summary, I'd like to leave this message with you. It should be the policy of Alaska's state government to rely wherever and whenever possible on marketplace competition and on the private sector to provide all telecommunication services. Marketplace competition will result and technological innovation, operating efficiency, and availability of a wide variety of telecommunications techniques that are now or may become available in the future. And it will promote the equitable and efficient use of such technology to provide services to all geographical areas of Alaska. That concludes my testimony. I thank you. And I've left some copies here. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I do have one question in a general concept. We hear the word monopoly used quite often, and it's understandable that certain services that are provided to the citizen by private agencies or enterprise certainly seem to need a protection, like water, sewage, telephone, and so on. But in this new era of cable TV and satellite TV and so on, where do we come into this need of protection for monopolies to provide these services to the people? Some question even if it is a compelling interest of the state. I'm sure that the previous gentleman is very sincere that this is a very basic need for everyone to have these services of television and so on. So if it's a very basic need, then do we have a responsibility of protecting certain aspects of private enterprise to a monopoly to make sure they make it? Or is the market in this field such that competition will give the people the services that they desire?
Well, I think the best way to point out the answer to that question is to look towards the other 49 states and the comparable services that are now being offered in the video sector at this time, cable and broadcast television services dealing with the new satellite technology. For years, the AT&T, which was considered to be a monopoly in the lower 48, strived to protect its monopoly and done a very fine job of it. They have now admitted that competition is there and it's going to thrive, and they have agreed to, basically in their concept and philosophy, that they will have to compete in order to get the business. Now, that competition that has been going on for several years now, particularly in the private line or video area, has brought many, many, many new and innovative services to the people that AT&T did not have out on the market and was not prepared at the time that they were a monopoly to provide that jurisdiction. They have been put into a corner now where they've had to provide it in the last few years. It's now going to flourish, and you're going to see many more innovative things come out because of the new companies that are out. I think that we see Alaska's future heading that same way. Now, I think there's two types, when we talk about monopoly, there's two types of policies that, or two areas, I should say, that need to be looked at. One, when we look at message telephone services, that's an issue all on its own. Most of the revenues in telecommunications in the state of Alaska derive from message telephone services. That's an area that could have a policy all of its own. Mr. Alex Hill pointed out earlier, the U.S. Congress now looking at the Communications Rewrite Act. There's been a number of bills in the Communications Rewrite Act put forth. There's one very dominant now that's being put forth and worked on. They're looking at message telephone service in one aspect of policy, and they're looking at all other services in another aspect of that rewrite policy. And you get into these video services areas. Basically, it has been proven that competition has thrived, and those monopolies that had all of the services before have also thrived in favor of that competition, even in these new fields. So I think that it's hard to lump the entire telecommunications picture into one policy because there's so many different aspects of it, and as Alex pointed out, and it could be policy plural depending on which aspect of telecommunications you're looking at.
Not to put you on the spot, but at the same time, try to get an answer.
That's fine.
Reviewing what Mr. Hill just said and also Executive Order 50, do you feel there's a tendency now that the state itself might be the major barrier for private enterprise to be going?
I think the state could put itself into that position. There was some fear a year before last during the session when it was trying to be a bill developed, which was a parallel thing of this executive order that came out during this last session, that state was getting into the business of private sector out of hand, and there was some great fear of that by the people who are in the industry and people who are users also. I think, yes, there is some big fear that we must be very careful in developing our policies, that the state doesn't develop a big empire in telecommunications and be the operating and owning agency of facilities and services. And I think that we're going to be very careful to do not take on the being the competitor to all the private enterprise. However, I think it's easy to point out also that over the last 10 years, when there has been a monopoly in Alaska for long-distance communications, whether it's message call or whether it's video or whatever, that competition has been the only thing that spurred the incumbent monopoly to move off of its feet and do something new and innovative. The state satellite TV project is a good example. When the state satellite TV project was first talked about in its concept, and I remember well in 75, 76, 77, attending hearings just like this, the long line here in Alaska viciously fought the concept of going over on the satellite. All at once, the governor's office that had an office talking to Facebook on decided, well, if they're not going to do it, we are. Well, as soon as the state, who then all at once became a competitor to that private enterprise, decided they were going to do it. Well, the office got up and done it. It's been obvious. There's other examples of that same thing that happened. The ownership of the state's earth station. Who should own, how he should operate in those kind of things. The small telephone companies very much wanted to own in many of the locations in Alaska those earth stations. The company which was fighting for ownership here in Alaska, all of them was attacked from a point that their maintenance or upkeep are on air versus off air. And I'm not just talking TV, but the whole concept of what TV is, I think TV stations. Was not a very good record. And that we ought to give these other telephone companies a chance to own these things, see what they can do with them. You know, get a little competition that we're seeing. Well, I think it's very noticeable that the long line carrier is now down. The upkeep and maintenance, the honor that they have improved tremendously in the last two and a half years. And you can go over there and look up the charts and development of figures of what has happened over the last 2 years and the meantime between carriers and percentage of honor versus off air. Again, there's a situation where another company, or small telephone company in this case, were attempting to compete, and the competition allowed the incumbent monopoly to get on the bus. So he's now thriving. So, I think it's very important that states not get into business and run private enterprise out of business. I think it's very important that where competition can thrive, that it should be allowed to thrive 100%.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next gentleman is Mr. John Lindau.
Gentlemen, I thank you. It appears that just about everybody is here to justify getting more money and more jobs from the state. There's some kind of a preference. I'd like to speak on behalf of the state spending fewer dollars and, in fact, getting more services from the private sector. I must admit, I don't know about all the claims and desires of the new deputy director when such things as how to have all road communications. I'm not at all familiar with that. But I do know about the activities of the state in the areas of public radio, public television, and public news services. And I just think I could sum it all up as saying that lots of money is being spent. The results are disaster. Never has so much money been spent for so little result, and with such adverse potential for the immediate future. Whatever the initial need was to have this kind of public service, I think that need in most places in the state is totally gone, and that there's now little, if any, need to spend money for public broadcasting or provide public satellite transmission of any kinds of commercial advertising. question come up as to whether the state has a policy. Well, I think it certainly does have a policy. It is to spend money as fast as possible, provide as many jobs for bureaucrats in the big cities as is possible, provide innumerable grants for consultants to come in and sell the bureaucrats, bring them up to speed to the private sector if it's at all possible, and worse, and the most serious thing, to attempt to influence public opinion, particularly in the bureaucrats, with seriously deficient news services and program orientation. I'm going to come back to that. I can tell you categorically, the broadcaster who owns three radio stations and a statewide news network is in the process of building two more stations. The service, the state of Alaska, the people of Alaska, would improve if the state would stop spending so much money and stop competing with private business. You are my biggest competitor. You, the state of Alaska, are preventing private broadcasting from expanding and providing those services which it can provide and which the public sector cannot provide, such as advertising to local businesses. You are the biggest single impediment to development of the economies in the bush. I say that categorically. I'll give you a good example. Right now, we are just about filed for two radio stations. I'm not about to tell you where they are for fear that the state will step in and try to preempt our filing or to try to beat us to the punch and build a competitor down there. When a private businessman has to look at the state as the enemy, when a private businessman must think in terms of the state spending money to set up a competitor or to encourage competitors, it is a very sad state of affairs indeed. I just do not believe we need demonstration projects of government planners to tell us how, in the areas that I know about, to have news and programming services provided to the people of the state, including in the bush. New services are going to be brought to the state by the private sector anyhow. I think that's already been made clear. When the government bureaucrats here get up to speed on the direct broadcast service, I think they will find that most of the things they're talking about and thinking of funding or are funding going to be obsolete in a few months anyhow, if not a few years, a few months. There will be no need for the state to do it. All the programming is going to come in direct anyhow. People will have their own receivers on their own houses, wherever that would be located. They're not going to be very expensive. You buy them down at pay and pay kind of thing. I grant you right now you need a big dish, a 5-meter dish or a 4-meter dish, depending on the circumstances. But the technological advances are occurring so fast in the private sector that by the time you get your consultant studies in, people are going to be installing these things. My company has already changed the delivery system on one of the proposed stations. In fact, the only reason the application isn't in is that we're pulling back. Change the technology. In fact, we'll be on the air even faster with the new technology. We just don't need your help and assistance to plan for it. But the worst part about the current centralization of services and all the money being spent is that it lends itself to massive political abuse. There is no question in my mind that there are political efforts to control and influence the news and programming which is going into the bush. And to subsidize certain friendly, I mean politically friendly, private broadcasters who are or will put desirable information into the book. And I would like to give you a specific example of exactly what I'm talking about. Twice in the last year, programming has been cut into the Alaska Radio Network, a private company that I own that provides news services to most of the commercial citizens in the book. Twice it has been cut in, by mistake, by Alascom. And both times I have personally called Alascom, and after I got through coming off the ceiling because they were cutting into commercial broadcasting across the state, I asked them, why did you do that? Both times it was a politician of this state issuing a press release which is being carried in the bush by the public station. And both times the answer from high-ranking Alascom officials was, we were ordered to play that in the bush by the governor's office. I tell you that that is a massive abuse of the Constitution of the United States and the free press. have politicians being able to control the programming which goes into the book. Under the FCC rules and regulations, the licensees are responsible for the programming. The transfer of that power goes from the licensees to the governor's office or any other political office, they have an effect to render their licenses. And I think that is exactly the position that we're in. I think if someone wishes to facilitate the private sector, as I've heard the deputy director and others, they could do that. They would just step aside and stop trying to help us. Fact is, it is inappropriate and wasteful for the state to actively compete with private broadcasters and private news services. But I think it's worse that the state is discriminating against the people in the bush and very seriously, if not illegally, misusing the money appropriated for public broadcasting. The current misuse of money and power is so serious in the areas of state programming control that I would not be at all surprised to see the FCC appoint a federal trustee to take over public broadcasting in the state of Alaska. The control cannot go from the licensees to somebody else. And I think that we would be the first state in the union that ever had spent so much money or had politicians try to seize control of news media to such an extent that the federal government has to do that. The fact is the FCC has an investigation, serious investigation going on at that very point right now. And I think we need to get our house in order and get the government out of competing with private business and out of spending all that money to hold down the development of business in the bush. It's unfair to the people of the bush. Yet it's very understandable that politicians will want to control the news media so they can get their message out. I speak to you as a politician, you know, I've announced the legislature. As much as I would like to control the news media, I find that even in my position that that would be a conflict of interest, and I will have to dispose of, in all probability, any control of the news I would feel if I do that. But only in Alaska does the state, as far as I can tell, only in Alaska, of all the states of the Union, does the state actually attempt to produce and control the news which reaches many of its citizens. And somebody just correctly pointed out,
it is very, very important. Because unlike most people in the world, in the United States, the real world down there as they think of it, our people do not have daily newspapers. They do not have local television in many communities. They rely, some communities, almost exclusively on what they're being told. And right now they're being told these things by a government-sponsored agency, which has already in effect admitted that it has left out certain stories because they would be embarrassing to people or to themselves. This is very wrong for the state to do these things. It's wrong in every way, and it's unprecedented in American journalism. And I suspect that it ought to be stopped. I've given you a list of points that I think ought to go into legislation. They'd be very easy points. They would no way constrain the delivery of any programming service to the people of the bush. They would remove the state government from paying some private advertisers or paying to transmit some private advertising messages and not of others, to paying some private broadcasters who are friendly and not others. It would remove the government from doing these things. Effectively, what I have proposed, and so that the people who do not have a list, I think that propose seven things. I propose that no advertising or acknowledgments or name mentions be provided for any business product by public radio stations, public television stations, or public networks in response to money payments, grants, and donations. In other words, stay out of business, stay out of competition with the private broadcasters, because that's how we pay our way, is with advertisements. They pay their way with legislation. Stop them from competing. Secondly, I think that no commercial advertisements shall be carried in state-funded or state-subsidized programs or in programs transmitted by state-funded or state-subsidized satellite channels. Stop the public funds from being used to interfere with competition in the private sector. Do not restrain my ability to get advertising revenues, because if you do, I will not build those two radio stations I'm going to build. Or if I do build them, I'll close them down. And then the local merchants will have no way to advertise, because under national rules, there are great limitations on how much advertising can be done. Commercial stations can contribute more to a Bush economy than a public station. Do not discriminate against the Bush and spend money in order to do so and provide them with inferior services. I think that no corporation, third point, no corporation doing business in Alaska should be allowed to charge higher prices to private broadcasters than it charges to an Alaskan public broadcaster. Discrimination, I think, is illegal. It may well be that if it's government funded, it's not. If it's not illegal, it ought to be. There should be no price discrimination. The Clayton Act nationally prevents price discrimination. It is, to me, patently unfair that I have to pay 2.5 times the rates for the Alaska Radio Network, pay Alaskom 2.5 times the rates than they charge the Alaska Public Radio Network. It's discrimination against private business. And if these big outside companies that own businesses up here are going to be anti-business, anti-Alaskan business, and going to discriminate Alaskans, they ought to be invited to leave, or their law should be made so that they cannot do so. I think that the production of news and any other programming, the fourth point here, that would otherwise be provided by a public radio or television station or transmitted to them should be put out to competitive bid and awarded to the lowest competitive, lowest qualified bidder. What's wrong with competitive bidding? The only people who don't want competitive bidding are people who have an inferior service and figure either they're going to have, they're too inefficient, they have high costs so they won't get the bid, or their services are inferior so they won't get the bid. Anytime anybody tells you they don't want competitive really bidding, what they're really telling you is, I have an inferior or high-cost product, and I can't stand the gap. There's nothing wrong with competitive bidding, and it should be mandated that such things as having the cost of news provided, or the Alaska Public Radio, or any other thing, that should all go out to competitive bid. It should go to the lowest qualified bidder, and when the bid goes out, it ought to specify what the state's going to have to spend if it does it, so that the private sector knows what they have to beat in order to get the contract, so no games can be played. I think there ought to be some kind of the law to say that the public radio stations may buy any programming or run any programming they want without orders from the governor's office or any other politician as to what they should or should not run. That's what the FCC requires. They should be required to live up to federal law. Why we should have to have a law to force the state officials to live up to federal law is a little escapes me, but I think it would be somewhat appropriate if they otherwise won't. And I think that no programming should be pre-funded as it has been, so that they cannot go out, so they have no monies. If you're going to let them exist, then let them go out and force them to go out for competitive bids. I think it ought to be a felony bribery charge for any employee of the state or a public radio or television station to solicit any payment for the purpose of influencing the content of programming. And I think that, here's the last one, which I suspect will be the most controversial. In my opinion, I think that the public radio stations and television stations in the cities with the populations of over 1,800 ought to be put up for sale, sold off to any private buyer, qualified private buyer, who will contractually agree to permanently maintain all current services. I in no way say that they ought to be sold off so services can be reduced. I in no way say that there should be any denigration of it in any way. But do we really have to have competitive operations going? Why couldn't we sell them off, take that money, and if we really want to serve the people of the Bush, build stations in communities which do not now have them, if they in fact need them, and I think there are probably some that do. Let's put the money out there to serve people rather than to serve government bureaucrats, because that's really what you're doing now. It's a bad joke to think that some of our bigger cities need a public radio station in order to get programming or some such thing. Take Anchorage, for example. Two daily newspapers. We have ABC, NBC, and CBS providing news. We have the Associated Press. We have 11 radio stations. Do you really believe that there's any programming going on in any way on a station here that spends many hundreds of thousands of dollars? And the same could be said in Fairbanks or Juneau and many others. And yet we have communities which have no stations at all. Why can't we, if we have to spend that money, why can't we put that money where it will help people who otherwise would not be served? And so I would say to you that I think that we have a very large mess today in public broadcasting, as I see it in the state of Alaska, and throwing more money at it is just the reverse of what is needed. What is needed is to cut back on the amount of spending and put it out to competitive bid and start thinking in terms of serving the people of Alaska instead of serving the bureaucrats and the consultants and the people who do studies and so forth. That's what I have to say. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have, except I won't tell you where I'm going to build the stations.
Dick or Benny?
I was just going to say talk about fresh air. I would like very much to have I noticed your testimony was in note form.
Well, I sort of wrote it last night. Yeah, I got more and more incensed as I was writing it when I started putting this together.
It would be possible to maybe have somebody type it up or something. I think it would be extremely valuable information to have. I think one of the real problems we have with the many people buying the concept that you just very well articulated is that you do have these perceived inequities of potential service in places where people live in very small pockets and the service isn't there. I think you indicated that the private sector could in fact take care of those situations
Yes.
better than they're presently taken care of.
Absolutely.
Could you go into a little bit more detail on that as to how
the technology has changed? The ability to deliver through satellite transmission has changed everything. There is no need, for example, as far as I can tell, to run anything into Anchorage and rebroadcast the local television stations out into the bush. Let's be realistic, friends. All a commercial television station is, for all practical purposes, is a rebroadcasting operation. It takes in CBS, the CBS affiliate, and fundamentally all it does is add a few commercials and rebroadcast it. With the arrival of direct broadcast satellite services, which are now legal, which are now underway, but coming, people aren't going to need a rebroadcaster. The same thing is true of cable, except in a larger area. The cable takes in various and sundry things using the satellite in most cases, and then has broadcast many different channels at the same time. People won't need the cable either when they can have something up on their house. And that is coming very, very rapidly. The technology, if one would read the broadcasting magazines each month, it's here. It's not maybe, it's not almost, it's here. And you can see it. Those of you who've read it, you know what I'm talking about. Reading the statements of the presidents of NBC, CBS, and ABC in terms of how they're going to cope with this totally new thing, and their brave statements about how it really doesn't mean the end of our affiliates and so forth and so on. What it does mean for Alaska is that people all over the state, without state aid, are going to be able to receive these things. They're also going to be able to receive radio transmissions from abroad, from the United States and so forth. There's really less and less need for you to be involved. If there is an intermediate need, it can be filled, and it ought to be filled with competitive bidding. It could certainly be filled by building radio stations, public radio stations, in small communities so that they have localized service. But how much more localized service do you need in Anchorage? Do you really need a 12th station, a public station, spending money, hundreds of thousands of dollars? And really, virtually identical to all the other stations. You can hardly tell the difference except that it's paid for by the state.
Your seventh or sixth point, where you suggest that a felony bribery for any employee takes money is there any past actions taking place that makes you put that point down, or is that a precaution for the future?
There certainly is anything I could prove. Look, it is historically control of the news media has been sought by politicians since time immemorial because it has a great influence on people. You can keep people from finding out other things and only find out those things you want them to find out. You can sway them in different ways. Maybe I'm very cynical. It doesn't surprise me, however, that twice on the orders from the governor's office that political speeches were being cut into the public radio network on orders from the governor's office. Do you really think that was being done to serve the Bush? It was being done to serve the politicians. That's inappropriate. If that had been news, it would have been carried on the newscast. That was propaganda. Why did they cut it in? Why would they grant a contract to one group and not another group? Why would they pre-fund things so the stations can't buy news services, say for my news service or any other? It's because they don't want that information there. They want to control what reaches out there. And why should we take a chance on this? In any event, it's going to go away as we have direct broadcast service.
Thank you. There's some fuzzy corners about this thing that I don't understand all of it. But I have a problem understanding how you can commercially deliver television to Bush places if it doesn't pay you to do it.
Why wouldn't it?
Where's your return?
I'm not in the television business. I'm in the radio business.
Okay, but...
I'll tell you where it is, because we've been just talking to one local business, a local hotel, about putting a separate satellite dish so that they could pull down some network stuff directly. And we pulled out a radio signal, some radio news that we wanted to use. You don't need to fund massive centers and so forth. Just let people shoot at this, put a dish, aim at the satellite, and take it off. I would bet that Alaskom could probably pull off most of the networks right now with its existing dishes. The cost of a dish is coming down so much. The price of getting a dish installed is really getting quite nominal. It's reaching a stage that there are very few villages in the state of Alaska that cannot today afford a dish to pull down whatever broadcasting they want. If they want CBS, they can pull down CBS. If they want NBC and ABC, they can pull it down. Right now.
The fact is that the state, as I understand it, the state is in the business because private industry, the state does it because the private industry can't do it feasibly, commercially. That's why I understand mostly why the state is in this business.
The reason the private industry is in it is because the state's in it. Why should the private industry put a dish, pay $10,000 or $20,000 for a dish to sit next to one that the state has just given to somebody? It's hard to compete. It's hard to compete with free. But I would think that most dishes today's technology is such, that for any village who wants to bring in some form of national programming, to buy a dish and put it up for a few $1,000s. Many of them already have dishes that could probably simultaneously pick up the programming off of whatever satellite they're particularly looking at. Now, if you want to get three, and they have to be on three separate satellites, then you need three dishes. That's true. And it may well be appropriate for the state to help a village finance that satellite. But the state shouldn't try to control what it looks at. Why not let each one have a satellite, let them look at whatever they wish to look at? Or give them two satellites and let them look at whatever they wish to look at. In fact, you take one and you can make it look at two different satellites under certain circumstances. It just gets more and more expensive. But you don't need a bunch of bureaucrats to do that. Make a list of villages, write